SEC fans, this is John Crist from Saturday Down South. Welcome to another installment of the SDS podcast. Coming to you from the iHeartMedia studio, WDAE in Tampa, Florida, 620 AM and 95.3 FM. You can follow me on Twitter at SaturdayJC. Our guest for this episode is Adam Spencer. He's one of our featured writers at Saturday Down South, and he also happens to be a product of the very prestigious journalism school at the University of Missouri. He doubles as our Tigers expert. You can follow him on Twitter at AdamSpencer4. Adam, I know it's sort of a rough time to talk about Mizzou football, to say the least, but I appreciate you taking the time and coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me, John.
Sure, anytime. The Saturday Down South podcast is brought to you by Crystal. If you're listening, you know the South loves football, but one thing the South might love even more, it's Crystal. That's right, Crystal, home of the classic Crystal Burger. They are ready to hook you up for your tailgate. The Crystal, the one you grew up with, the one you loved in college way past midnight. Right now, it's only 79 cents all day, every day, as many as you want, just 79 cents. And because no tailgate is complete without chicken wings, Crystal has you covered there as well. All wings, any wings, 49 cents each, Saturdays and Sundays. That's boneless, traditional bone-in wings, buffalo and barbecue, any sauce, any wing, any flavor, 49 cents each all weekend long. But best of all, Crystal is going to take care of our podcast listeners this fall. Text SDS to 37793, and they're going to send you two free Crystals. That's SDS to 37793 via text message. 79-cent Crystals, 49-cent wings. I guarantee if you show up to your tailgate with a steamer pack full of Crystals, you're going to be voted MVP. Stop by your local Crystal today. And now Adam Spencer. Adam, the Tigers are coming off a bye week, had an extra 7 days to kind of get back to basics. Just give me the temperature of the room right now in Columbia as far as the football team is concerned.
Well, it sounds like everybody's excited to get out of Columbia for once. You know, they have their first SEC road game, first road game of the year, actually, coming off of three straight home losses. You know, Ish Witter, the senior running back, he's excited to get out of town. And, you know, I don't blame him with the fans that you've seen out there, or the lack of fans, I should say, at the stadium, and just all the negativity surrounding the program and all the noise about Perry Odom losing his job, you know, maybe getting out of Columbia and heading to Lexington is exactly what this team needs right now.
Yeah, we heard the speech from Coach Odom after the embarrassing loss at home to Auburn two Saturdays ago. I believe it was 51-14, and really never in doubt. And I don't know Coach Odom well, but I've talked to him once or twice at SEC Media Days in Alabama, and I hear him on the conference call every Wednesday set up by the SEC. And he's usually a very polite guy, a very reserved guy, but he's sort of, I'm not going to say he came unglued, but he showed a side of himself that we really hadn't seen before. Clearly, he's frustrated. Clearly, he knows he's not making a ton of progress in terms of wins and losses. He still believes that there is progress being made on this team. They're doing it the right way. I absolutely believe him. But as a Mizzou alum and someone who covers and follows this team very closely, what was your reaction when you heard Coach Odom kind of go off at the podium in a way we haven't heard before?
The pressure that he's putting on himself is all self-made. He's the one who was one of the first ones to say anything less than a bowl game would be a disappointment this year. So hearing him go off the rails like that and say it's a rebuilding project, plain and simple, well, you had all the pieces there for a successful season. You know, you had a ton of offensive production returning with junior quarterback Drew Locke. You know, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC last year. And to see what's happened to him this year, it's just, it's unexplainable, really. He's set school records against Missouri State, but since then, as I'm sure you've seen, you know, he's been a major disappointment, as has the rest of the offense, and losing Demetrius Mason certainly isn't going to help, but I don't see where the offensive struggles have come from this year, and that's been the biggest surprise.
Now, it's only year two. As you said, he's sort of inherited a program that really needed kind of a refresh altogether. But, you know, this is the time of year we love to talk about the hot seat, whether it's Butch Jones at Tennessee or all of a sudden Ed Orgeron with things not going well at LSU. But just how warm a seat do you believe that Barry Odom is sitting on? Again, it's just year two. This wasn't a ready-made program he inherited, so sure, he needed a while to turn it around. However, I could see if things get really nasty and all of a sudden you finish 3-9 or 4-8, where just hitting the reset button and saying, hey, let's move past this and start fresh again, I could see the argument for that. I'm certainly not saying that's what Mizzou should do, but I could see the argument for that from some boosters who are getting very antsy. How warm do you feel this seat is for Coach Odom right now?
Well, first of all, let's not assume a 3-9 or 4-8. You know, based on what we've seen so far, it
wow.
wouldn't be out of the question unless something changes. You know, hopefully this bye week.
You still get to play Idaho and UConn, so look up there, my friend.
Right, and the at UConn game, you know, that's based on the way they've played. That's no easy task. I'm going to need to see something from them in this Kentucky game before I'm willing to consider UConn even an automatic victory. But to get back to your point, I think if they were going to pull a quick trigger on Odom, it would have been after the Auburn game, after that speech, because they had the bye week coming up. That would have been a good time to get someone else in there if that's the way that they felt. I think he's going to make it to the end of the season. And unless he does get the 2-10 record, which, again, I'm not saying that's going to happen at all, but that is within the realm of possibility at this moment. Unless that happens and things just completely fall apart and you see the Tigers losing 51-14 every week, I think he gets a third year, or at least gets to start a third year.
Now, it's also year two for Josh Heupel as the offensive coordinator. This was considered a great hire when he came to Columbia. And yes, there are some fireworks here and there. We've seen some incredible offensive performances. You referenced the opener against Missouri State. Granted, it's Missouri State, but tons of points, tons of yards, looking unstoppable at times. And then Drew Lock setting, I believe, a school record for passing yards in a game. However, the last 3 weeks, it really hasn't happened. And if you look historically at what Coach Heupel has done with this offense, is that he shreds bad defenses and teams well outside the Power Five, but for the most part, particularly in SEC play, they're just not getting anything done. So I don't see a lot of progress against the teams you need to beat to potentially get back to Atlanta like you did 3 or 4 years ago. Again, just your assessment of Coach Heupel in year two and where you believe this offense is going.
Like you said, it's great against lesser teams and non-SEC teams, and I think that's part of the gimmick. When you run such fast-paced offense, you need to have an offense where plays are consistently generating first downs, and they do that against teams like Missouri State, as we've seen, and Delaware State last year. But when you get into even mediocre SEC defenses, then that's when the problems start, and running a play every 10 seconds is only hurting your defense. The Tigers are defending for 45 minutes a game almost, and that's just not a recipe for success. So in a piece that I've got coming out later today, I write about how against Kentucky, he needs to slow down the offense. It's great to run a no-huddle offense, but just the rapid-fire pace that's coming out, that's only hurting the Tigers right now, and they can really benefit from taking some time at the line of scrimmage, not necessarily going into a traditional huddle offense, but just giving Drew Lock a little bit more time to survey the defense and make sure that they have the right play call in, I think would help both the offense and the defense.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to this team nearly as closely as you do, but it sounds like I'm seeing similar things as you are. The way I've described this offense lately is that it's going fast for fast's sake. I understand that this is the nouveau way to play offense in the 21st century in college football, as many snaps as possible. We're not trying to run 60 or 70 plays a game. We want to get 90 and maybe even 100. But what I see a lot from this Tigers offense is basically aborted plays. They're so worried about snapping the ball with 27 and 28 seconds left on the play clock that I see linemen that aren't set. I see receivers that are not having very good communication, knowing which routes to run. I see a quarterback dropping back in the pocket, and just the play is not developing around him. I love the idea of going 100 miles an hour, but if you're getting 90 snaps a game, but only 45 of them are quality snaps, how much are you truly helping the offense, coupled with the fact that, as you suggested, you're destroying this defense? So I think we're sort of seeing the same thing. Slowing down the pace could help, maybe getting fewer snaps, but a lot more quality snaps over the course of a game.
Right. Just the play calling has gotten so unimaginative, too. When the team was having success last year, or when they have success against lesser opponents, FCS opponents and non-conference FBS foes, you know, they're running some nice play action plays. They're setting things up with the run. But when you get against a team like Auburn or even a team like South Carolina, those traditional simplistic play calls on offense are getting stopped on first down, and then they keep running fast, and it's a recipe for failure, and we've seen that. That's been proven. So I don't know what they did over the bye week, but it'll be interesting to see if Heupel slows things down a little bit and if he takes a little more time to make sure that the right play call is in. And it'll be interesting to see how they try to put themselves in position to succeed on first downs when they get them.
Now, this is year three for Drew Lock as a starter. I want to talk about his career in Columbia so far. Clearly, he wasn't ready to go as a true freshman. The plan was not for him to play, but we had the Matty Mock situation, and we don't necessarily need to revisit. You talk about a young man thrown to the wolves and overmatched. That was the situation in 2015. Last year, some very gaudy numbers, some huge performances, but again, if you break down the splits, he's tearing up the teams you expect him to tear up and not making much of a difference against, you know, the SEC teams that you need to beat to go somewhere in this conference. This year, I think he's been a little bit of a disappointment, like this team overall. He had more experience than any quarterback in this league coming into 2017, and I don't see a next step being taken. I have a hard time blaming him because we've talked about Coach Heupel, we've talked about the defense and where Coach Odom is with this program, but Drew Lock singularly, how do you grade his performance through four games?
Well, this isn't going to make many Mizzou fans happy, but I would compare him almost to Blake Bortles. You look at the end of games, and he'll always have, you know, around 250, 275 passing yards, even against these tough teams. A couple of touchdowns, but then, you know, there's a couple of interceptions to go with it. And there's, you know, like you said earlier, when you're running 90 snaps and only 45 of them are quality, well, he's making the most of those quality snaps, but they just don't matter in the grand scheme of the outcome. So he's still making the plays. He's just not stringing them together to get the team down the field against these quality defenses. And like we said, the play calling definitely has hurt him this year, but yeah, he's missing on a lot of deep routes. You know, he's throwing the balls at receivers' feet. He's not hitting them where they can do something with it, which, when you have guys like Jonathan Johnson, Jamon Moore, even Demaria Crockett has taken a step forward in the passing game. When you're not hitting those guys in stride and putting them in position to make a play after the catch, it gets tough for the offense, and that's what we've seen from Drew Lock a lot this year.
Now, believe it or not, there still are a lot of talent evaluators at the next level who believe that Drew Lock is an NFL quarterback. And he's got good size, and he's got a good arm and a good head on his shoulders, and maybe he can develop and be someone who makes a paycheck and a pretty healthy one down the road as a professional. As you see this guy and someone who went to this school and has followed this school over the years, you know, the quarterbacks that we always think about when it comes to Mizzou, at least I do with my NFL background, is Lock potentially a Blaine Gabbert, or is he potentially a Chase Daniel? And the yin and the yang there is that you have Gabbert, who came out of this program, put up prodigious numbers, and all of a sudden he gets to the evaluation stage with the combine and the pro day, and he's oozing with tools. And the NFL says, you know what, young man, you're a first-round pick. Now, his NFL career has gone the way it has, but still, he got that first-round money, and he doesn't have to give it back. Versus a Chase Daniel. He hasn't really had a chance to be a starter anywhere. However, even as an undrafted free agent, the NFL teams didn't feel he was worthy of a draft pick, not talented enough, didn't have enough upside, what have you. But he's made a nice career for himself and earned some free agent contracts and a lot of money just being a quality number two in this league, which is very, very valuable the way that quarterbacks tend to go down. So if which way do you see Drew Lock potentially going? I know those are some somewhat polar opposites for an NFL guy, first-round pick versus undrafted free agent. But if you had to pick a lane for Locke at this point, does he follow more what Gabbert was or follow more what Daniel was?
Well, back when Gabbert was coming out for the NFL draft and he had all that hype, you know, I was writing just from having seen him play, I was writing that teams should not even think about him in the first round. And then, of course, we know what happened with the Jaguars taking him, I think, number 10 overall. I think Locke has more of that potential. I think he'll be a high draft pick, not next year, but 2019 when he comes out, because I don't think he's going to leave early.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so I think he has more potential to be a first-round quarterback just based on some of the intangibles that you talked about. Like, he looks the part of an NFL quarterback. He certainly has the arm. He's got some numbers, like we said, against the weaker opponents Mizzou plays, but, you know, it put him in the right scheme, and he has what it takes to play at the next level. I don't know what's going on mentally with him during this early season struggles, but you know, you put him in a good situation where, you know, maybe he doesn't have to start right away, and I think he has what it takes to play at the next level. It'll just be interesting to see what happens and how the draft shakes out next year, because with all the quarterbacks coming out this year, it'll be interesting to see where he stands among next year's quarterbacks. But I think he has way more first-round potential than he does undrafted potential.
Yeah, I said something similar about EJ Manuel back when I covered Florida State. He's got the size. He's got the talent. He's a phenomenal young man. He's going to charm the pants off of some sort of GM out there, and he did. But I covered that. I covered him up close. I knew he wasn't going to live up to that first-round status. Sounds like you have sort of a similar grade on Lock. So you're listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. Our guest is Adam Spencer, one of our featured writers and also a proud graduate of the University of Missouri, granted a little more proud 2 or 3 years ago. College football is here. It's week 6 and exclusively SEC on SEC action. Georgia at Vanderbilt, Ole Miss at Auburn, LSU at Florida, Arkansas at South Carolina, Alabama at Texas A&M, and Missouri at Kentucky. Now's the time to get your tickets. And when you need tickets, you need to go to Ticket City. We've been working with Ticket City for a long time. They are the experts in the field, having served over 1.5 million customers. They've been the place to go for tickets almost 30 years. And best of all, they're offering $20 off for all of our podcast listeners. All you need to do is go to TicketCity.com and enter the discount code SDS20. And you're going to get $20 off your order, the game of your choice. Again, that's TicketCity.com, discount code SDS20. Get off the couch, go to the stadium, watch some live football, get your tickets for SEC football today. Adam, back to you now. You talked about it earlier in the show about 2 straight road games now, and maybe getting out of Mizzou is the way. I mean, this is the first week of October, and they haven't left the Show Me State yet. 4 straight home games and a bye to start the season. Very unusual scheduling, but at Kentucky and then at Georgia after that. Like you said, getting away from home might be a good thing. That being said, when they finally do return to Faurot Field versus Idaho, if things go poorly in Lexington, things go poorly between the hedges, how many people are showing up for that Idaho game?
It's homecoming, which is always a big deal at Mizzou, where you know, we like to say that we're the first ones to start homecoming. So that'll always be a big deal. But it might, if the Tigers lose big, like they have the past few weeks. Yeah, you're right. I don't think many people will show up, and you know, the student section has been clearing out pretty early, and I don't blame it. You know, when this is the product that's being put on the field, I don't blame anybody for leaving early. You know, the Tigers have shown no life on offense, and that Purdue game, in particular, I thought the players just quit on Barry Odom after that was the week after DeMonte Cross was fired. You know, I don't blame anybody for leaving, and unless they show even some fight, I think it's unrealistic to expect them to go into Georgia and pull off what would be one of the craziest upsets in college football this year. But you know, if they don't at least compete against Kentucky, I wouldn't blame Mizzou fans for completely staying away from the homecoming game.
So let's take a closer look at this schedule the rest of the way. I hit on about half of it, but at Kentucky, at Georgia, hosting Idaho for homecoming, traveling to UConn, sort of a strange out-of-the-conference road trip for a league team, hosting Florida, hosting Tennessee, at Vanderbilt, and then at Arkansas, the battle line rivalry, I believe it's called, to close the regular season. You seem like the prospects are pretty dim. Maybe bowl eligibility just not even going to happen at this point, no chance. But do you honestly see 2-10, 3-9, something that disastrous? Is there a way to turn this program around and get some good vibrations, or is 2017 pretty much done as far as you're concerned?
It all comes down to this weekend at Kentucky. If Mizzou can at least compete and be in the game in the fourth quarter, if not win, then I'll hold out hope for at least a 4-8 season. But if they show what they've shown against, you know, for comparison's sake, South Carolina, if they show what they did against South Carolina, you know, that's not going to get it done, and that might not even be an effort that can beat UConn on the road. Like you said, that's a weird game, and I'm not sure what to make of that game right now. But Arkansas, you know, you can – it's a rivalry. It's sort of a forced rivalry, but, you know, they've battled each other pretty well the past few years. So, and last year's game, you know, Mizzou went down, I think, 24-3 or 28-3 and came back and won. So you can't rule anything out with that game. But other than that, yeah, I'm not seeing a lot of wins on the schedule, especially if they lay an egg against Kentucky this weekend.
Now, we spent a lot of time talking about the offense and sort of the flawed nature of it, but we need to spin it to the defense. And I'm just asking a brutally honest question. Is it even possible to have an elite defense with the type of offense that is being played in Columbia right now? Keep in mind that Barry Odom played at Missouri. He's got a defensive background. This is a team that has played very, very good defense the first couple of years it came to the SEC. You could call this school defensive line university for the while, with all the guys that, you know, came out of there and were first-round picks and still playing in the NFL and crazy productive, whether it's Shane Ray or Sheldon Richardson or Michael Sam. They got a lot of guys who can really play. Charles Harris, a first-round pick this past year. We liked what we saw out of Marcel Frazier. Hasn't quite happened yet. But can you even play elite defense if, even when your offense is having a good day, you're only possessing the ball about 20 minutes at a time out of 60? Plus, not only are three and outs toxic to any defense, but the three and out for Missouri, I mean, they're on the field for about 35 seconds at a time.
It's about stringing together good offensive possessions to give the defense energy, and that just hasn't happened so far this year. It's easier to play defense when you know that your offense is going to put points on the board when they have it. So the Tigers haven't been doing that this year, and you can see it in the defense. You know, that's when you're losing 31-3 or 35-3, you know, that's when hands are on the hips, that's when heads are hanging, that's when, you know, nobody wants to play defense when you're down that much. So you give the defense energy by not only controlling the ball, which they do need to do more of, but you give the defense energy by keeping the game competitive, and they haven't done that this year. I think they have the next D-line U guy coming up in Terry Beckner in a couple years. I think he has all the makings of a potential first-round pick, but, you know, he's a big guy. You know, he can't be out there defending for 45 minutes a game. That's just unrealistic to ask of any of these guys, really. And that's what Heupel's offense, that's the position that they've been put in this year, and you're seeing it. You know, when you go into the third quarter and the game's already decided, you know, what's the motivation to play defense.
Now, listeners, we did not script this interview, but literally, if you look at my screen right now, the next question is Terry Beckner Jr. So, Adam, you took me right to him. This is a five-star kid, somewhat of a local kid, I believe, from East St. Louis High School, right across the border. He was a huge, huge commitment, a huge signing 3 years ago. Big things expected from him. Those are the types of athletes that don't tend to go to Missouri. They tend to filtrate other places, whether it's in Oklahoma or in Ohio State. But he stayed home, and he was supposed to be a product on this defensive line that's had so many productive players with Coach Pinkel before Coach Odom even got there. Now, this is year three for him. He was doing pretty well as a freshman, then had a knee injury last year, wasn't super healthy, not super productive. He's also had some curious decisions off the field, but this is already year three for him. He's flashed here and there. He does make his fair share of plays on a bad defense. It's tough to do when you're down by three or four touchdowns and got your hands on your hips, like you said, but this is a guy with a ton of potential. This is a guy who's already in year three. He's draft eligible. Is it possible that he's out the door and he's going to take his shot at the NFL before this defense ever gets a chance to turn around? Or is he potentially a linchpin guy that can hopefully fix things the rest of the year, maybe finally be 100% healthy and have the kind of monster senior season in 2018 that can elevate the defensive line around him?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because, you know, like you pointed out, he's torn both of his ACLs in back-to-back years. You know, he looks like he's finally healthy this year, which is great to see. And, you know, fan or not, like, you always hope to see a young player like that stay healthy at the very least. It'll be interesting to see. You know, if he has a big rest of the year, then he probably should declare for the draft. But if he keeps going like he is now, where he's stuck on this terrible defense and hasn't put up the kind of numbers that you'd expect from a future first rounder, then maybe he comes back for his senior year. But you'd never fault a guy if he gets a first round or even a third round grade. You know, you'd never fault a guy who's had two major knee injuries from taking the jump and getting some money while he still can. But yeah, if he does decide to stay, you know, that's big for Odom and the defense, because at the end of the year, they're going to have a real talk about this fast paced offense and whether it's the correct move to continue. And if they do slow things down, that's when Beckner, like you said, he could become a linchpin and he could really shine.
Yeah, I think you're right, by the way, especially at that position. If he even gets around two or three grade, be a second-day draft pick, I think it would be hard to turn that down and get yourself a couple bucks in your pocket. But, Adam, we've talked micro. Let's try to talk macro here. Again, you're a product of this school. You know it a heck of a lot better than I do. A lot of people say this football team is broken, and a lot of people think that this school is broken. It is shocking to read headlines about how down the enrollment is. This is a school that has not only had problems on the football field, but social angst on campus, and you had demonstrations, and you've had presidents resigning and people in high-level occupations that just can't take the heat, and they've gotten out. It has been very, very ugly on this campus. Now, we haven't seen it so much this year, but a year or two ago, this was borderline civil rights movement type stuff. It was really incredible to see from afar how much has that toned down. How much has that occupied just the oxygen in Columbia? And I think it's only natural that it's going to have an effect on the football program as well.
Yeah, I'm not there anymore, obviously. But, you know, from what I've heard, you know, it's far from, you know, those protests are only a couple years removed. So it's far from being solved or anything. I don't want to go as far as to say that everything's A-OK on campus, but it does seem like the guys that they've brought in, or the leaders that they've brought in to replace the people who have resigned, it seems like they've got a good structure in place now. And that's important. You want that stability. And Jim Sterk, the new athletic director, he seems like the right hire for what this school needs right now. And I want to make a point about the basketball team. I think that the basketball team is what could put Mizzou back on the map here, you know, with Michael Porter Jr., you know, one of the top players in college basketball this year. If they can make some noise in basketball, that's only going to help the football program, I think.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. That's absolutely true. My final question for you, Adam, you know, this is a phenomenal school. I think a lot of people don't realize just how good of a school this is. And protect, especially people in our profession, because, I mean, especially all the time I spent in Chicago, I know a ton of J school kids from Missouri who do incredible work, but just, it's a strange question. I know it's out of the box, but I'd love to hear your answer as an alum, but does the school need to sort of solve the football team, or does the football team need to help kind of fix the school?
I think it's just going to take some time. They're still getting used to SEC recruiting. When you look back at some of the best teams that the Tigers have put on the field, there were a lot of Texas products out there, and that's because when the Tigers were in the Big 12, they were able to recruit the Texas teams with the promise of, you know, playing two or three road games in their home state a year. Now that that's all shifted and they only play Texas A&M once every blue moon, they've lost one of their major recruiting bases. And yes, they need to do a lot better recruiting Missouri. But when you lose a place like Texas as a main source of recruits, you know, that's tough. And they're still learning how to get into Arkansas. That's where Demaria Crockett's from. That was a good find. You know, Drew Lock, Kansas City, you know, that's the kind of guy that you need to get. They're still trying to fight for St. Louis. Like you said, Ohio State, Ezekiel Elliott was from St. Louis, and he went to Ohio State. You know, they're losing these guys to Oklahoma, like you mentioned. You know, they need to get more guys from Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi. You know, those are the states that they need to figure out how to reach into, and it's just going to take some time. I don't think that the school itself is putting the football team in a bad situation. This is all on Coach Odom and his staff, and they need to figure out how to recruit in the SEC. And I think hiring Rick Haley, their new defensive line coach, I think that was a great hire. And he has ties in the Louisiana area, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few years with recruiting and whether Odom's around to see it or not.
Adam, thank you for joining me to talk Tigers, and I hope to do it again under much sunnier skies.
Thanks for having me, John. I appreciate it.
All right, that was Adam Spencer, one of our featured writers at Saturday Down South. Remember to follow him on Twitter at AdamSpencer4. And thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. Special thanks to our friends at WDAE in Tampa, as well as our sponsors, Crystal and Ticket City. If you like what you heard, you can subscribe on iTunes or wherever your favorite podcast can be found. Be sure to give the show a rating as well. My name is John Crisp, and for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.